Thank you, Tom. It is 8:10. We thought we'd focus this morning on policy, not politics, and on one particular policy area that a new government will face. Almost everyone agrees that the funding of social care doesn't work. Some of the things people in the sector complain about are relatively easily fixed. You can tinker with immigration rules, for instance, to get more people from abroad or fewer into our care homes. You can add to funding, and the current government would point to emergency additions of cash, for instance, in the 2022 autumn statement. But overall, the system is almost universally understood to be broken. The Commons' cross-party public accounts committee summed it up a couple of months ago like this: years of fragmented funding and the absence of a clear roadmap has brought the adult social care sector to its knees, they said. Waiting lists are rising, the sector is short tens of thousands of essential staff, and local authority finances are being placed under an unsustainable amount of pressure. And of course, it's not just the public finances that are hit. There are huge costs being borne by those who are dealing with the need to look after their relatives. Alison Rigby in Reading told us about the costs of keeping her mother in care.
My mother has Parkinson's and is a type 1 diabetic, and we're now currently paying $1,770 more or less a week. You're between a rock and a hard place. Once your loved one moves into a care home, it becomes incredibly traumatic for them to then move on anywhere else, anywhere cheaper. So they've got you, basically. It's a very challenging situation. I have twice tried to apply for continuing healthcare costs, but have been refused twice. Even though my mother is unable to practically feed herself, she's incontinent, she can't walk, she is needing to be turned in bed, she can't dress herself, she's choking, but I have been refused for continuing healthcare, which means that they would pay for the care home costs. But I don't know, unless you've actually experienced it, I don't think anybody has any idea. I don't think anybody in government, unless they've experienced it and know the tangled web of the care system costs, you wouldn't have any idea. It's really harsh. It's really harsh. It's really harsh because you have to go into the care home and have the trauma of seeing either your mother or your father or your husband or your wife in that situation, juggling your day-to-day life, juggling the finances, the emotional side of it is terrible. When you see somebody that's been so strong and so active and they can no longer do anything for themselves, it's really heartbreaking. And I think going forward in a general election coming up, it's a bit of a poison chalice for anybody to take on board, I think.
That was Alison Rigby, and our huge thanks to her for taking the time to talk to us about the situation she faces. Let us talk now to Sir Andrew Dilnot, who chaired a commission on the funding of care and support. What we can now say is many years ago. He's certainly talked to us down the years, thousands of times, I should imagine. He's currently warden of Nuffield College at Oxford University. Sir Andrew, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Just to pick up on what she was saying right at the end there, Alison Rigby, it is difficult for the parties, for all sorts of political reasons, to concentrate on this issue. And it is fair to say, isn't it, that this is a picture of cross-party failure?
Absolutely. So politics comes into this in that in the end, a sensible response to this is going to need to come from politicians. But politicians on all sides have dropped the ball on this. There was a royal commission at the beginning of the Blair-Brown 97 to 2010 government in 1998. Nothing happened. The coalition government 2010 to 15 commissioned the report that you mentioned that I chaired. There was legislation, but nothing happened. There was more legislation 3 years ago, but when the current government took office in 2022, they postponed the implementation of it for 2 years. So yes, across the political spectrum, this is something that people have identified regularly as something that ought to be dealt with. but have never quite got round to doing it.
So when you hear them come on this programme and others and say, oh, we need to get together and we need to have another commission or we need to have cross-party talks, what do you make of that?
I really don't think we need another commission. What we need to do is act. It's not even the case that putting something in a manifesto is enough. In the last election, all three of the main English political parties had commitment to the kind of reforms that we recommended 13 years ago. We actually need to do it. I think one thing that it's perhaps worth mentioning is that means we have to be committed to where the money to pay for it will come from. The amounts of money involved are not large by the story of overall government spending, but there is some additional expenditure needed, and that means we need to be honest about where that will come from. I think in the absence of that, it's very difficult to see how action takes place.
What bring us up to date on where we would be roughly in terms of the figures when it comes to individual contributions and the state's contribution and how it would work. When you look back to the commission that you were in charge of, to the report that you produced, but bring us up to date on how you think it could work now and what the rough sums would be.
So at the moment, if you have more than £23,000 of wealth, including your house in many cases, then you're entirely on your own, as Alison and her mother and the rest of her family find themselves. So you have to pay for all of your care until you're down to your last £23,250. There's a means-tested system that helps those with less asset and income than that. What we proposed in 2011, what I still think is the right thing now, is we need to put more money in now to the existing means-tested system, and we shouldn't put it in every year as an emergency, as happens just about every year. We should give local authorities the opportunity to plan. That's the first thing. We should reform the way the means-tested system works to make it a little bit more sensible. And then critically, for everybody else, and including people like Alison, we should say, look, if you need social care, which most of us will, you're on your own to begin with. But if you end up needing more than this amount of social care, the state will step in. The amount that we recommended for that cap on people's liability 13 years ago was £35,000. In real terms, that would now be between £55,000 and £60,000. The recommendation that is on the statute books and is supposed to come into play in October 2025 would set that cap at £86,000. Who knows whether that will happen? I desperately hope that it will. It's not as generous as I would like it to be, but it would make an enormous difference in, for the very first time, putting a cap on the liability people face, actually giving everyone some insurance.
And you said we could afford it out of the public finances. I mean, it's not that huge an amount of money, which is interesting, because I think the assumption is that we can't, and that the parties will simply decide that we can't. And you look at that IFS report that we were reporting in the news today about the state of the public finances. But you're saying this is affordable at a cost that a government could at least consider putting into place?
Yes, I mean, we're talking about an annual cost when fully implemented of £3 or £4 billion. Now, £3 or £4 billion is a significant amount of money, but compared to annual total government spending of roughly £1,000 billion and national income of £2,500 million, it's really a small amount of money, or compared to the scale of the health budget or the education budget. These are small amounts of money. And the reason it's not that expensive is that although almost all of us will need social care, most of us won't need very much. The critical thing to address is the fear that we all face that we'll be one of those people like Alison's mother who needs a significant amount of social care for a very long time. And that's an amount of money that almost nobody can save up for. And so at the moment we face fear because we know that this is a big risk against which we're simply not insured.
Yeah, but is it fear on the one hand, but also a kind of just hoping for the best on the other that makes this less of a political issue than perhaps it should be? In other words, people just don't or just hope that it won't happen to them or to their family.
I think they do hope it won't happen to them. That's not realistic. As I say, 80% of us will definitely need some kind of social care before we die. And we've kind of got our heads in the sand here. We don't say, I hope I won't have a car crash, or I hope my house won't burn down, or I hope I won't have a healthcare need. In all of those cases, either the private sector, in the case of houses and cars, or all of us together, in the case of health, pools the risk. We don't do this in social care. My analogy here is that many people with social care find themselves it's a bit as though they're standing in the middle of a road with a lorry coming towards them, and they're hoping they die before the lorry hits them. Well, that's not a sensible way to be carrying on public policy.
It's also worth saying, isn't it, for those working in the sector, things have been pretty miserable in recent years, and that is one of the things. I mean, obviously, we've got to sort family financing out, but we also need to sort out the way the sector treats those who are in it.
We absolutely do. And many of these 1.5 million people, in fact, almost all of these 1.5 million people are wonderful people doing a fantastic job looking after people that we all love and care for. They tend to be very poorly paid. And those who are organising the system in local authorities are being asked to make decisions about how to allocate resources that are inadequate, that none of us would want to see. So a critical part of reforming the way the funding works is that that's the only way that we're going to be able to have a system which pays people properly and where we can get enough people to go and work in this sector at the moment, because the wages are so low, among other things. We have an enormous shortage of people to do this thing. And as all of your listeners who've experienced this in their family will know, if you need social care, it's the most important thing you face.
Yeah. And of course, as we were making the point earlier in the programme, it is not, I mean, it matters that it's for elderly people, and we all of us will get elderly or hope to at some stage, but it's much wider than that. Social care addresses a much bigger slice of the population than merely elderly people.
It absolutely does. And the pressures on funding don't simply come from the need to care for older people. They come from the increasing number of younger people, both children and adults, who are living with and able to have fruitful lives with conditions that decades ago would have led to their death. And so a lot of the increased need for funding is coming from the need to support people in that position too.
I think what I get from this conversation, what people will get at home, is actually it is fixable. So what, I mean, we've had all these commissions, including yours, and all these years of conversations with you and with others, and there is this kind of sense, I suppose, in the background, this is just so huge and so difficult that that's why the parties can't get there. But actually, what you're saying, it seems to me, well, tell us what you would say to the party leaders about how possible action is.
So it absolutely is possible. It's true that the costs of this are not zero, but they're not large relative to the costs of other bits of public activity that we do. It's true that they'll grow because, hooray, more of us are living longer. That's something we should be celebrating. I think that the reason that this hasn't happened, or one of the reasons, I think it's a big reason, is that many people who've been through the social care system, when they come out the other end of it, they're so exhausted they don't become campaigners. And for reasons that I think are to do with our fear, but also the way in which it's easy not to want to think about being very old, we all are collectively guilty. We slightly turn our heads away from this. We want to pretend it's not happening. Well, it is happening. It will happen. It can be fantastic. The self-reported life satisfaction of many people needing social care is actually higher than the average of the population as a whole. Hmm. We can have good lives being cared for. Politicians really should have the courage to talk about it a lot, and then, let's hope, actually finally to do it.
Sir Andrew Dilnot, always a great pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much.